There is so much gratitude in the air today as we take a different direction in this episode of Musings on Golf. Along with our executive producer, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin, welcoming you to our first show in March of 2026. And our guest today, longtime golf writer and keynote speaker, Joel Zuckerman. Well, he certainly delivers on the theme with his new book, Gratitude Tiger, which tells all about how and why he has written more than 300 letters of gratitude over the past 12 years. And folks, some of those letters have been sent to some very recognizable figures in golf. Staying with that theme, that feeling of gratitude, after the interview that you'll hear with Joel, we'll hear from both Nico Echevarria, who ended up winning the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, although it was as much him getting the trophy handed to him because of just the stunning back-to-back double bogeys by Shane Lowry, who you will also hear from after the interview with Joel. It's a lot of gratitude this week, I think, in so many ways. It started, interestingly enough, with Rory McIlroy and his dad, Jerry, winning the pro member at Seminole Golf Club in Juno Beach, Florida, just down the road from me. This is, you talk about a field that any tournament director would love to have. Brooks Koepka, Colin Morikawa, Shane Lowry, Matt Fitzpatrick, Stuart Sink, among those were also in the field. But Rory and his dad, and I know this meant so much to his dad, Jerry. They shot a gross 63 on Monday and prevailed, and they'll have their name up on the famous locker room among winners. I mean, you talk about others who have won that one-day event. Men Hogan, Byron Nelson, Jack Nicklaus, and Arnold Palmer, and now Rory gets to have his name up there with his dad. So very cool. And I know just tremendous gratitude that Rory has for his parents who raised an only child back home in Northern Ireland. And look at what he's become as far as just one of the great golfers of all time. The Ryder Cup Europe has to feel incredible gratitude for Luke Donald, as they announced earlier today that Luke will become the first captain in 30 years to lead Ryder Cup Europe. And as the captain for three straight events, he will be the Ryder Cup captain next year at Adair Manor in Ireland. And he'll also try to become the first ever to win three straight Ryder Cups as the European captain. Don't bet against him, please. And the irony continues to be with Luke Donald, as he was only picked when Henrik Stenson, as the original Ryder Cup captain selection for Europe, decided to go to the LIV Tour, and that disqualified him. And you talk about good luck falling in the laps of Ryder Cup Europe and the players there. And they're going to be a really, really strong 12-man team again in about a year and a half in Ireland. I also want to talk in the back end a little bit about Tiger Woods and some really cool announcements from the USGA. I want to talk a little bit about Ricky Fowler and the honor that he's received. One more thing before I talk just a little bit further about Joel Zuckerman. Really happy for Justin Thomas. He's been down for the count literally for quite a number of months with back surgery. He will make his debut this week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard. So very, very happy for him. The Joel Zuckerman interview, it is different. It's very different than what we've done. Joel's written 10 books, mostly on golf, and really great books. He's written a book, an incredible coffee table book on the golf courses that Pete Dye designed. He did a great, great book called Pros, Pros, Extraordinary Club Professionals Making Golf Fun. He references early on that he heard from PGA of America President Don Ray of wanting to have almost a second version of this book. It was so popular. And Bob Ford, the longtime head professional at Seminole and at Oakmont, was one of the club professionals featured in that. But this is different for us, and I like it. I think it's always good to throw a little something different out there. You know, the gratitude that Joel has for people that he knows, some he doesn't even know. And these are not letters. These are not just a paragraph or two of, hey, I love you, or hey, I saw you win this tournament. These are, in his case, typewritten letters of length, at least a page or roughly a page, or handwritten that he has sent off. And he tells just a lot of really great stories along the way. So you're going to enjoy this interview with Joel Zuckerman. Also, before we go to break, just a reminder that you can check out Musings on Golf on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere that you listen to your favorite podcast, which, of course, Musings on Golf is your favorite. Or you can check us out on the Musings on Golf TikTok. Okay, Joel Zuckerman, really good interview. You'll enjoy this. Right after you hear these words from our corporate friends, our corporate partners at William & Harry and the Friars Golf Club. When golfer and entrepreneur Rhett Butler founded William & Harry Golf, he brought luxury, individuality, and performance to the game while giving back through support of veterans organizations and suicide prevention initiatives. This spring, William & Harry Golf unveils its 2026 collection, perhaps the most innovative, most comfortable, and most distinctive lineup of handcrafted golf shoes. They feature vibrant colors in both exotic python and ostrich, and classic golf colors for our calfskins line of shoes, which have already been recognized by Golf Digest, comfort and quality. William & Harry is the luxury golf brand with a conscience, built on trust in our craftsmanship, our values, and our promise to reinvest in the communities we serve. When you choose William & Harry, you choose a brand that stands behind every product, every cause, and the causes it supports. Visit williamandharry.com, the luxury golf brand with a conscience. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work, planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Well, I'd like to think that all of us have a sense of gratitude, and we each choose to express it in our own way. Our guest today, who has written widely and often about golf over the years, well, he has chosen to express his feelings in a unique manner, as he has written more than 300 letters of gratitude to an array of friends, family, and in some instances, well-known figures, certainly golf figures. Gratitude Tiger is the name of his new book. It's his 10th overall. And what a fascinating discussion we're going to have about the highly personal approach he takes to tell others why he thinks they're special. Joel Zuckerman, we're taking a different tact on Musings on Golf this week. I'm excited about it. How are you, my old friend?
Very good, Kelly. Thanks for having me. As I just mentioned to you before we started, I do quite a few podcasts, but this is my first in the golf space, which, as you know, was my milieu for more than 20 years.
Yeah, and before we went on, you mentioned about a book that you wrote that profiled 30 PGA of America professionals called Pros Pros, and you actually heard relatively recently from the man at the top of that food chain and PGA of America President Don Ray.
Yes, unusual text, to say the least. Don Ray reached out to me out of the blue and had to identify himself in his text because I didn't have his number. And he said, Kevin Hammer, your old friend Kevin Hammer, gave me a copy of your book, Pros Pros. I'd like to talk to you about doing a sequel. So that one threw me for a loop. And whether that sequel ever comes to fruition, God only knows. But I left the golf world behind. And the fact that there's a small chance I might come back into it, that's just a unique twist in the road.
Yeah, and Kevin Hammer, who will be the new president of the United States Golf Association in early 2026, he'll be a guest shortly after that announcement in the springtime. Let's get to this book. As I mentioned, you've written 8 books about golf. 2 of them were honored by the International Network of Golf as the Book of the Year. It's very different. Gratitude Tiger, you tackle a very different subject. It's something that's very personal. And something I think, Joel, that's kind of a throwback in a way. You know, I'm the youngest of five. I have sisters who are letter writers. And I had a mom and who's a letter writer. So if you would talk a little bit about the book, please, in general, and why you decided to go down this path away from the golf world.
Okay. So the long and the short of it is, and anyone who's listening who is a golf writer or was a golf writer knows that things changed after the financial crisis. It took a few years, but just look at the size of the magazines. Golf Digest, Golf Magazine, Golf, they're all smaller, skinnier. The opportunities. So I was very busy. I began writing about golf January 1st of 1998. I was hired as the golf columnist for the Carolina Morning News on Hilton Head Island, and I had a facility for writing. It was my first professional writing job, and I quickly got into local magazines, regional magazines, airline magazines, national magazines. It took a year or two, and then I started writing books. They came quickly. At one point, I wrote 5 golf books in 6 years, and so I was busy. Some of them sold very well. Some of them sold not as well. When people ask, what's your favorite book? It's kind of like, you know, being asked, who's your favorite child? You really can't say that out loud. But after about 2016, 17, 18, the opportunities started to diminish golf writing wise. And I started to turn my attention to gratitude. And now I have a whole new bag of tricks, Kelly.
Okay. So that term, gratitude, the title, Gratitude Tiger. Okay, explain that and explain the theme of the book. What's the book about?
All right. So Tiger has nothing to do with you-know-who, even right. though we both turned pro at about the same time in the late 90s. He only did 10 million times better than me, but I did okay for my profession. Tiger is an acronym. It means tapping into gratitude engenders rewards. It's a fancy way of saying it's better to give than to receive. If you are willing to tap into gratitude, be aware of it all hours of the day, your life will improve.
Why did this become important to you? Why did it become important to write handwritten a letter of gratitude? Was there an individual that motivated you? A moment? What happened?
I will tell you that story, but I must correct you. All of my letters are on the computer. That is how I have this incredible and always growing archive mm-hmm. of 300 or so letters. So I know what I wrote to who and when. Otherwise, I couldn't write these books.
Yeah, true.
Right? But of course, I will encourage the listeners who decide to take up this incredibly enriching hobby to write handwritten letters. 9 just happened to be on the computer.
Yeah, and they're lengthy, right? The letter you're talking, this is not necessarily something a paragraph or two.
It's so my letters are 1-page typed. Mm-hmm. The problem, well, not the problem. The interesting point is I start in 14-point type, but I will go to 12 and sure. sometimes 11 and 10.
Sure.
One of my quirks is that I write a 1-page letter. There's no second page. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing I'm going to mention, my first letter was written to someone in the golf space, not as well known as some of the people we'll talk about in a minute. But my first letter was to a PR friend of mine in the golf business that some of your listeners will know, Dan Shepard,
Absolutely.
Who at the time was working for Buffalo Communications. Now he has Dan Shepard Public Relations.
Yeah.
And when I sat down, Kelly, to write that letter in November of 2013, it never occurred to me I would write a second letter. I did it as an intellectual exercise. I can write a letter of gratitude. I read about it in a book, a famous self-help book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff.
Yeah.
So when I wrote the letter to Dan, I'm going, okay, I can write a letter of gratitude. And I, when I put it in the mail, I was overcome with this feeling of connectivity and warmth. It threw me for a loop. And it was so intoxicating a feeling, the feeling being that in 2 or 3 days, this guy is going to open his mail. And amongst the bills and circulars and catalogs,
Yeah.
I'm going to be expressing my gratitude to him for all he did to help me in my golf career.
Yeah.
It was such an intoxicating feeling, so addictive. I've now done it nearly 300 times.
And so did, in the case of Dan, who's a prince of a guy, just a real professional at what he did. Why did you feel compelled to send that letter to begin with? And then, as you said, it sounds like it wasn't until you literally sent it that you realized, wow, this is going to have an effect on someone that I maybe didn't anticipate. And from that, therefore, you've done another one and another one.
Exactly. So I didn't expect when I put the letter in the mail that I would be overcome with this warmth.
Right.
I knew he'd get a kick out of it, because if you get a letter out of the blue and the person who's writing to you is expressing their gratefulness in knowing you, obviously you are going to be positively affected. What has brought me to the computer 300 times is the fact that every letter I write makes me feel terrific. Because at the end of the day, Kelly, we all know very few of us are altruists. Everybody operates by five simple words. What's in it for me?
Yeah.
How is this helping me, my family, my business, my friend group?
How does it make you feel when you finish writing that letter? And how does it make you feel knowing how the other person is likely to feel?
So I should tell your audience, Gratitude Tiger is a very nice book. You are very kind. You've used a word I never heard before in any review when you told me my new book had you enthralled.
Absolutely. Lovely, yes, it did.
Lovely, lovely concept. So the book has unanimous 5-star reviews on Amazon. But what I want to impress upon your listeners is that at my core, I'm a professional speaker. The book is just a calling card. It's a 160-page business card for a meeting planner or an HR executive who says, Joel, who? He talks about what? Here, look at Gratitude Tiger. This will explain his ethos.
Okay, explain to me, Joel Zuckerman, veteran golf writer turned Gratitude Tiger author. What is in a letter of gratitude? And what is it?
All right.
If I'm getting one, if I'm number 301, what am I likely to get that I wouldn't receive from somebody else thanking me for XYZ?
Very good. Great question. There's a chapter in the new book called Obligation versus Compulsion. Obligation is if you were raised a certain way, as you were, as I was, and were of a certain age.
Yeah.
If someone has you to dinner, someone invites you to a party, someone gives you a gift, there's a certain obligation to provide them with, it doesn't have to be a thank you note, although that's certainly nice, thank you text, thank you email, thank you phone call.
Yes.
Okay? That's an obligation. A letter of gratitude, by my way of describing, is a compulsion. You feel compelled to share your gratitude to someone who is not expecting it. So let me take it one step further. Say you had me to dinner at your home in Florida. You might, in the back of your mind, be hoping / expecting that you'll receive a thank you note, call, email, or text from me. And if I didn't provide it, you would say, oh, that Joel, he was raised by wolves. That is an obligation, Kelly. The compulsion to share your gratitude with someone comes out of the blue. So I can promise you, when my good friend Dan Shepard received that letter in November of 2013, he was taken aback. The only clue he might have had was I had to text him for his address.
All right, right.
But other than that, these things come out of the blue, and it's just a sincere expression of, hey, thank you for being part of my life. You've been helpful to me.
Did Dan get back to you?
I can't remember. I will tell you that only about 80 or 90 of the 300 letters I've sent have acknowledged it.
What motivated you then to write the second letter or the third letter? What motivated you to sort of have that mindset of, I want to keep doing this?
So when I put the letter in the mail to Dan, I was overcome with this feeling like, oh my God, in a few days, he's going to get this letter. And I'm going to say, hey man,
Yeah.
You've been, so I had a reasonably successful golf writing career, certainly prolific. I'm not on the level of some of the, you know, the big names in the sport, but I did write a lot of books, had some success, traveled the world, and Dan was helpful, very helpful. He got me on a lot of press trips. He introduced me to editors. He was just a good friend to me. And when I heard of the concept, write a letter of gratitude, actually in the book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, it was called Write a Heartfelt Letter. I didn't think about my wife. I didn't think about my daughters. My first thought was, I'm going to write this heartfelt letter to Dan Shepard because my golf writing career was so integral to my identity from 1998 till about 2018.
Yeah,
he was the man. He got me going, him and his partners, his ex-partners, but Dan more than the others. So he was the first person I thought of to write this letter to. And when I put it in the mail, I'm like, holy smokes, that feels good. I'm going to do this again.
And again, to be clear, what gratitude, Tiger, what a letter of gratitude is not, as you said, is an obligation. It's not a text. It's not a call. It's something that's more expansive. Is that a fair word to use?
Yes. So let me say it this way. I there's so much to this subject. I will go off on tangents, and I appreciate you pulling me back.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
So a thank you note is for something specific, an introduction, a gift, a dinner, a party. A letter of gratitude is a general sense of gratitude to a person, not for anything specific, but just expressing gratitude in general. I didn't write to Dan saying, hey, thanks for that press trip to Mississippi or to Wales or to Northern California. I just want to say, hey, man, you've been so helpful to me over the last 15 years. I started writing about golf in 98, and I wrote to him in 2013. So it was literally 15 years. And I met him a couple years in. And it was just a general sense of gratitude. But as I said a moment ago, when I put it in the mail, I was like, oh man, this is like a real connection that he's going to get this letter and be, you have to assume, extremely pleased. That's why I keep doing it.
Okay, so we are a golf-themed, golf-related podcast. So I'm going to tie this back into golf. You've written letters of gratitude to a couple of major champions.
Yes. All right.
Why did you write to Rory? Why did you write to Dave Stockton? Why people who maybe clearly you don't know anywhere near as well as, say, Dan Shepard?
Okay, great question. Never been asked this one before because I've never been on a golf podcast. So let's start with Pete and Alice Dye.
Yes.
I wrote a big book in 2008 called Pete Dye Golf Courses, 50 Years of Visionary Design. It was a big one.
Yes.
A New York Times bestseller is 8,000 hardbacks. We pre-sold 22,000 before it went to the bookstore. And Kelly, people returned my calls only because I said, yeah, I'm calling on behalf of the Dye family. Otherwise, I'd still be waiting to hear from the president of Kiowa or from Herb Kohler or whatever. So I express my gratitude to Pete and Alice, not only for allowing me this opportunity, but that's the micro view. The macro view was, thank you for creating these 100 plus golf courses that beguile and enliven and flummox golfers all over the world. So that letter had two parts, a micro and a macro. Micro, I can't believe I got this opportunity to write this book. So many people have tried to get the permission to write this book, and I got it. So that's the micro. The macro was, oh my God, I'm a golfer like everybody else. You love Harbortown, you love the Ocean Course, you love Teeth of a Dog. So, and I also wrote to their son, Perry Dye, of blessed memory, as are Pete and Alice, sadly, as we all know, gone. Perry was my point person. Perry, as you know, was also an acclaimed course designer. I mean, no, he wasn't Pete, but no one was.
Yeah.
I also wrote to Perry because him and I were partners in writing this book. He didn't write it, but he opened doors for me. Dave Stockton helped me write a book in 2015 called Golfers Giving Back. It's a book that I wrote, my last commercial golf book, about some of the best charity golf tournaments in the country. Super unusual topic.
Yeah.
And I picked out, I don't know, I think it was 40 charity. You know how many charity golf tournaments there are, Kelly? 140,000.
That's what golf is, right? 40,000 charity golf.
40,000 a year.
Amazing.
I picked out 40 or 50, I forget. And Dave Stockton, who I knew, oh my God. Dave helped me with a couple books talking about Kiowa, talking about the Ryder Cup. So I've been in touch with Dave, and someone recommended to me, Dave is very charitable, like a lot of pro golfers are, of course.
Yeah.
And Dave opened doors for me to find charities that would be worthy of inclusion in this book. So I wrote a letter of gratitude to Dave Stockton saying, hey, man, I couldn't have gotten this book off the ground without you. So that was what I call a transactional letter of gratitude.
Mm.
I'm grateful to you. You've been very helpful. I'm so glad Kevin and Lori Hammer introduced me to you, because Lori Hammer and Dave Stockton are old buddies from the 50s and 60s. Who else? Rory. Love that Rory. I was composing a letter of gratitude to him when he was on the cusp of winning the 150th Open Championship at St. Andrews. About, what was it, 2011, 2021, 2022?
Yeah.
And when he couldn't close it, and when Cameron Smith won it,
yeah.
I tweaked the letter and said, Rory, your time is coming. You're gonna win again, and you're going to win a jacket. You're going to win another jug. So I expressed my gratitude to Rory because I really admire him. I think he carries himself beautifully. It was supposed to be a letter of congratulations, but instead it was kind of a letter of commiseration. So let's start with Pete and Alice Dye.
Yes.
I wrote a big book in 2008 called Pete Dye Golf Courses, 50 Years of Visionary Design. It was a big one.
Yes.
A New York Times bestseller is 8,000 hardbacks. We pre-sold 22,000 before it went to the bookstore. And Kelly, people returned my calls only because I said, yeah, I'm calling on behalf of the Dye family. Otherwise, I'd still be waiting to hear from the president of Kiowa or from Herb Kohler or whatever. So I expressed my gratitude to Pete and Alice, not only for allowing me this opportunity, but in that's the micro view. The macro view was, thank you for creating these 100+ golf courses that beguile and enliven and flummox golfers all over the world. So that letter had two parts, a micro and a macro. Micro, hey, I can't believe I got this opportunity to write this book. So many people have tried to get the permission to write this book, and I got it. So that's the micro. The macro was, oh my God, I'm a golfer like everybody else. You love Harbortown. You love the Ocean Course. You love Teeth of a Dog. So, and I also wrote to their son, Perry Dye, of blessed memory, as are Pete and Alice, sadly, as we all know, gone. Perry was my point person. Perry, as you know, was also an acclaimed course designer.
Right.
I mean, no, he wasn't Pete, but no one was.
Yeah.
I also wrote to Perry because him and I were partners in writing this book. He didn't write it, but he opened doors for me. Dave Stockton helped me write a book in 2015 called Golfers Giving Back. It's a book that I wrote, my last commercial golf book, about some of the best charity golf tournaments in the country. Super unusual topic.
Yeah.
And I picked out, I don't know, I think it was 40 charity. You know how many charity golf tournaments there are, Kelly? 140,000.
That's what golf is, right?
40,000
charity golf.
40,000 a year.
Amazing.
I picked out 40 or 50, I forget. and Dave Stockton, who I knew, oh my God, Dave helped me with a couple books talking about Kiowa, talking about the Ryder Cup. So I'd been in touch with Dave, and someone recommended it to me. Dave is very charitable, like a lot of pro golfers are, of course.
Yeah.
And Dave opened doors for me to find charities that would be worthy of inclusion in this book. So I wrote a letter of gratitude to Dave Stockton saying, hey, man, I couldn't have gotten this book off the ground without you. So that was what I call a transactional letter of gratitude.
Mm.
I'm grateful to you. You've been very helpful. I'm so glad Kevin and Lori Hammer introduced me to you, because Lori Hammer and Dave Stockton are old buddies from the 50s and 60s. Who else? Rory. Love that Rory. I was composing a letter of gratitude to him when he was on the cusp of winning the 150th Open Championship at St. Andrews. About, was it 2021, 2022?
Yeah.
And when he couldn't close it, and when Cameron Smith won it,
yeah.
I tweaked the letter and said, Rory, your time is coming. You're gonna win again, and you're gonna win a jacket. You're gonna win another jug. So I expressed my gratitude to Rory because I really admire him. I think he carries himself beautifully. It was supposed to be a letter of congratulations, but instead it was kind of a letter of commiseration.
When you write a letter of gratitude, whether you know the person intimately or you know of him from a distance, let's just say in Rory McIlroy, do you kind of outline, give yourself some bullet points to work off of before you write it? How do you put the letter together?
Okay, great question. Every podcast, you're as good as the previous guys I talked to. They hit the talking points, okay? So I'm a writer. My milieu for many, many years was golf. But like when I wrote the first letter, I'm like, I can write a heartfelt letter, right? I can do all kinds of stuff.
Sure.
So if you are not a writer, how do you write a letter of gratitude? There's a chapter in my new book, Gratitude Tiger, called 7 Paragraphs, 7 Sentences, 7 Words. And in that chapter, I detail, just because I write 7 paragraphs, doesn't mean you, Kelly Elbin, or any listener, can't write 7 sentences. You can keep it simple, and even 7 words. So I told you a few minutes ago, I'm mostly a speaker. The book is a calling card. So when I'm speaking to a corporate audience, I'll say, if you're the boss and you've got 50 people under you, you can show deep gratitude in just 7 words. Let me give you a couple examples. This department would not run without you. Boom, that's it. You send it along, and that engenders loyalty and builds morale. Here's another one. You are the best hire we have made. Okay? Someone says to me, Joel, what if they're not the superstar? What if they don't deserve that kind of praise? I said, then you can say, your numbers are improving monthly.
So wait a minute. Would you classify that short sentence as a letter of gratitude the way you would a one-page letter that you would put together?
Yeah, but I'm extremely, as you can tell, and you know your listeners can tell, I'm very effusive. I'm a very gregarious person. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I'm never at a loss for words, and I never have writer's block when I go to the computer. But let's face it, Kelly, most people are more taciturn. Most people feel more vulnerable. They are not. My letters are, you've read my letters, because in the book Gratitude Tiger, there's 12 sample letters, one from every year. 2013, when I started this out of the blue, all the way through 2024, I chose one sample letter. I think Dave Stockton's letter is in the book. Actually,
yes.
Dave's is in the book and Rory's is in the book.
That's right.
Which is funny. You know what I'm just realizing talking to you? I put in the first letter I wrote to Dan Shepherd, who's in the golf business. I put in Stockton, I put in Rory. That's 3 out of 12. That's 25%. No percentage of letters I've written to golf luminaries? 3% or 5%.
Yeah.
It just so happens I use those letters in the book. So my point being, you don't have to write chapter and verse. You can show, I write these long letters because it touches into my creativity. They're streams of consciousness, letters, but you can show deep gratitude in a few sentences because a lot of people don't have the time, the bandwidth. They don't want to appear vulnerable, but it doesn't matter how long the letter is, you are going to feel great when you share your gratitude with someone else.
You need to know the person to some degree, or could you send a letter of gratitude to someone who never met, but you admire from afar?
Well, how else would you describe Rory?
You've been around him.
I've never said a word to him. Mm. I feel about Rory the way I used to feel about Tiger before 2009. Okay. And I know Rory's had his ups and downs with relationships. I just think he carries himself in such a way that is admirable. And like when you spoke to Gary Player on his 90th birthday, I put Player, Jack Nicklaus, and Rory, and I'm a big fan of Tom Watson, sure, who I think has always taken the high road.
Yeah.
I just feel, you know, let's face it, golfers in general are at a higher standard than your average NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball player. But I feel that Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, and Rory are at the top of that heap. Not that I've written to Gary Player, even though we share the same birthday. He's 25 years older than me. I've never written to Jack Nicklaus, who has helped me out with books before. You know, Scott Tolley has helped me more than once reaching Mr. Nicklaus. But Rory, when he was going to win the 150th Open Championship, I was composing the letter. And then the next day I pivoted when he couldn't close the deal. But generally speaking, I'm writing to people I know.
I have great gratitude in spending time with Joel Zuckerman, a longtime golf writer whose new book, Gratitude Tiger, Creating Joy Through the Art of Impactful Letters is the full title. And Joel, we talked a bit about golf, but the intro to your book is also from someone who was an outstanding athlete with one of the great names in Peekaboo Street, one of the great skiers. How did that come to be where you got to know Peekaboo Street? Is that from where you live out in Utah?
Yeah.
And then why did you kind of tap her on the shoulder and say, hey, would you do this for me?
Yeah. Why? Because I'm me. Because I'm, Kelly, whatever modest success I've had, I owe to one statement. If you don't ask, you don't get. If you ask, you might.
Yeah.
So I know Peekaboo. I didn't want to touch. I don't have the marquee names in the golf business anymore. I'm quite friendly with some golfers, but they don't have the name recognition. In other words, I can't reach Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Rory, John Rahm. Okay.
Hard. Sure.
Peekaboo, and I'll say this about Peekaboo Street. If her name was Jane Jones, no one would remember her. She could have won an Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
Peekaboo Street, she's famous. And in my town, Park City, Utah, you swing a dead cat and you'll hit either an Olympian or a realtor. And sometimes they're one and the same.
Right.
Ah, there's Olympians here who have traded their notoriety to become successful realtors. So I run into Peekaboo, who I know a little bit. And I said, Peekaboo, this is a great story, by the way. I go, Peekaboo, would you write the foreword to my new book? She goes, what's your new book? I said, it's going to be called Gratitude Tiger. And she starts smiling. I go, what's so funny? She goes, do you know when I won my Olympic gold medal in Japan, I was wearing a tiger helmet? I said,
right.
No, I'm not an Olympic nerd. I don't know everything about everything. She goes, yeah, I had a different helmet every year. I once had ram's horns. I once had the landscape of Idaho. She's from Idaho.
Yeah.
She told me different stuff she had. She goes, my helmet artist made me a tiger and I won Olympic gold. She goes, yes, I'll write the foreword.
Do you get, first of all, have you exceeded 300 letters since you wrote this book? Is that number ticked up a bit?
I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I'm getting there. 295 out the door. And the thing is you could ask, and other people have asked, how do you know enough people to keep expressing gratitude?
True.
But Kelly, as long as someone is providing a kindness, doing a service.
Yes.
Okay, I'll give you an example. I wrote two letters. I put two letters in the mail. Was it yesterday? As I told your listeners, I'm mostly a speaker. The subject is proactive expressive gratitude. And by the way, I should take this back. When my golf books were successful, Pete Dye was very successful, Pros Pros, thanks to Kevin Hammer and others like Kevin, big time pros that are now just out of the picture. I'll name three or four. Bob Ford, Randy Smith, yeah. Bill Safran, Mike Harmon at Secession Club.
Just great golf professionals.
The Mount Rushmore. Lori Hammer. Kevin's father. These guys were very helpful in getting that book out into the world. And the Pete Dye book stood on its own pedestal. These books gained attention, and I was asked to speak at country clubs, at corporate retreats, on luxury cruise liners. And I realized I had a facility for public speaking. So as I left the golf world behind, I realized that I should write a keynote about gratitude, because unlike you and me and your audience who loves golf, most of the world could care less. So if only 1% of the world cares about golf, or maybe, let's be generous, 2%. Shall we be really generous? 3%.
Sure.
Everyone should care about gratitude. So I wrote a keynote address about the enrichment of writing letters of gratitude, how it'll change your life, you, the writer of the letter. And then, you know, most people write a book and then speak about it. I was speaking and then wrote the book about it.
Yeah.
So the point is, I don't know what the point is. There's a million points. Where were we?
Hey, Joel, when you write these letters, do you ever get emotional?
Yes.
As you're writing the letter, should people, when they write these letters, like I would think, if I just decided to write a letter tomorrow to someone, I'm trying to think of who that would be. I would imagine I could be somewhat of an emotional person too, that it would touch me. Hell, I think it would touch me during the process, Joel, as much as when I actually drop it off. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Depends who the subject is. I have 5 grandchildren. I've written to 3 of them.
Mm.
I wrote to my oldest grandchild on her first birthday. That was in 2020. That's in the book.
Wow. Yeah.
That's my letter from 2020. I wrote to her little brother on his 3rd birthday. I wrote to their little cousin when he was undergoing surgery last summer, when he was 2 years old, or maybe about a year ago, 14 months ago. And I will at some point write to the littlest ones, who are 7 months and 6 weeks.
Hmm.
Those are emotional letters. When I write to Dave Stockton, or when I wrote to Dave, or Lori, or Rory, those are, Rory's is kind of a fan letter. Dave's was kind of more of, like I said, a transactional letter. But I've written to people who have lost children. Those are emotional. Where are you finding the gratitude there? That's a tough letter to write, of course. That's the hardest letter to write to someone who's lost a child.
Oh. Oh.
But I say, I hope you can find the gratitude in the 30 years or the 27 years you had with them. But again, I was talking to you earlier, Kelly, writing letters of gratitude is a compulsion. I feel compelled to share this message that I've developed and I continue to hone. So I wrote 2 letters that went in the mail 2 days ago, okay? I was speaking in Mexico at a wellness resort. I was hired to provide gratitude workshops and lectures. I wrote a letter of gratitude to the woman who hired me. She's the program director. That letter is reasonably transactional. I thanked her for taking a chance on me.
Sure.
And I opened the door for further discussions for a return visit in the future. I would classify that as a transactional letter of gratitude. The other letter I wrote was to a yoga instructor there. He's been coming there for 42 years as a guest instructor since like 1982. And him and I have such a synergy. He's probably 80-ish. I asked him for his address on the last night, and I banged out a letter of gratitude telling him how grateful I've been to. I've met him there twice. I've been there twice in the last 14 months, 15 months. He was there both times. So people continue to impact me. You would think, oh my God, you know, when I speak and I do a Q&A, people go, you've written 300 letters of gratitude? I don't know 300 people. And I always laugh. My circle is vast. High school, grade school, college, Wall Street, Savannah, Georgia, where I live for 20 plus years, here where I live in Utah, the golf industry. And I'm continuously meeting people who impact me, and I want to share my gratitude with them. So hopefully the well will never run dry.
Winding out a really, really neat conversation with Joel Zuckerman, the author of the new book, Gratitude Tiger. You keep a record because you do type them, as opposed to what I said early on about handwriting. You have a record of all of them, right? So in a way, it's an archive. You can refer to it. You've got that. Would you recommend that people do the same thing? That if they send that letter, whether they handwrite it or type it, that they make a copy so they have that on file, if you will.
That's a great question. I've never thought of making a copy of a handwritten letter. Okay. And by the way, let me interject. I have kept track in my life of so many things. So my previous website was vagabondgolfer.com. And I felt compelled to keep playing new golf courses to honor the name of the website, Vagabond Golfer. The tagline was, there's only two types of golf destinations in the world, where I've been and where I'm going. Okay. I have to keep up the Vagabond Golfer persona by seeking out new courses around the nation and beyond. With Gratitude Tiger, I have to keep writing letters, and don't think it's a burden. Don't think it's a chore. I enjoy it, but I'm trying to keep myself relevant in this new field, which necessitates more letter writing. Now, in answer to your question, I never thought of someone making a copy of a handwritten letter. I think that's a capital idea. I just so happens that I typed, or I'm showing my age, I used the word processor, that first letter, and I never stopped. And let me tell you this, Kelly, since I've written 300 letters, but I've also written probably 50 thank you notes for dinner, for a party, and those, of course, are handwritten. And I don't care what I said. I express my sentiments in 4 or 5 sentences, and I put in the mail to thank them for dinner, for a party, etc. But they differ from a letter from gratitude, as we discussed earlier, because those are something of an obligation, not compulsion.
Joel Zuckerman, final question, and maybe it seems like a rather basic one, but what do you hope, what should people come away, what should be their takeaway from purchasing your book and reading it? Is your hope something that they will start to write these letters? Maybe not to get to 300, but just to begin that, to begin a process, if you will.
Okay. Great question. So there's a chapter in the book at the very beginning, and the name of my keynote address is called The 7 Pillars of Expressive Gratitude. Pillar number one, we've touched on. Writing letters of gratitude will make you, the letter writer, feel good. Pillar number two is obvious. It will make the recipient feel good. So, and I won't belabor this, the other 5 pillars, but when I speak, Kelly, 5 minutes into my keynote, I'll ask the audience, think of 2 people you're grateful to, one that's with you and one that's no longer with you. Everyone has a reflexive response. Everyone, you can see in their face, immediately thinks of 2 people. And I'll ask 2 or 3 people in the audience to share with the assemblage who they thought of. Then later on, I'll say, it's too late to write to the person no longer with you. So don't hesitate. The person that popped into your mind that you're grateful to, write them a letter of gratitude. Do it today. Do it tonight. Do it over the weekend. But do it. Because as Ralph Waldo Emerson said, you can never do a kindness too soon because you never know how soon it will be too late.
And while you've kept it at one page typewritten, for any individual, that can vary, right, Joel? It can be however he or she, whatever length he or she chooses, correct?
It's not what you say.
Yeah.
It's not how you say it. It's that you said it. So yeah. Don't let punctuation, penmanship, syntax stop you from sharing the gratitude. Because at the end of the day, it's not what you said, it's that you said it. Or as Maya Angelou once said, probably her most famous quote, at the end of the day, people will forget what you said and even what you did, but they won't forget how you made them feel. And when you write someone a letter of gratitude, whether it's seven paragraphs, seven sentences, or seven words, you will make them feel terrific. But the secret sauce, Kelly, is that you write the letter to make yourself feel good. And people have said to me, boy, you're a selfish bastard. I go, maybe I am, maybe I'm not. But why have I done this 300 times? I'm not Mother Teresa. I do it because it makes me feel good. The letter that you receive, or the letter that Rory received, or the letter that Pete and Alice received, that's called collateral joy. Their delight or flatter, whatever they're flattered or humbled or elated or whatever they are, that's collateral joy. I wrote the letter because it makes me feel good. That's the secret of gratitude, Tiger.
I have been, as I said earlier, I have now been enthralled by this interview. Joel Zuckerman, where can people buy Gratitude Tiger, A, and then B, as far as what you are doing on a on an ongoing basis and speaking, presenting, and so forth, how can they learn more information?
The website is the same as the book, gratitudetiger.com. Where can you buy the book? I used to say you'd find bookstores nationwide, but the easier answer is at Amazon. Or I can get books out myself if you reach out to me at gratitudetiger.com, because Christmas is around the corner and personally inscribed books have a unique value. But most people are going to go to Amazon. I understand it. Amazon is not a friend to the author. When the Pete Dye book came out in 2008, they were immediately selling it at a deep discount, which rocked the boat for myself and Pete and Alice and Perry Dye. But Amazon's business model, as you know, is to make a nickel on a zillion things a day.
Yeah.
Not taking into consideration the work and the effort that has gone into it from the person who created it. So Amazon helps me. My reviews on Amazon, as I said, are unanimous. 5 stars, but they're not really a friend to the author. So go to gratitudetiger.com and I'll get your listeners out a personally inscribed copy.
Beautiful. The book, Gratitude Tiger, the author, Joel Zuckerman. It's been a real treat, my friend. I'm glad we could do this. Let's hope a lot of people listen to this and are inspired to buy the book and start the letter process. All the best to you, Joel. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Kelly, it's been a pleasure.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Golf is more than your scorecard, the brand of clubs you play, or the clothes you wear. Golf is a journey where every round is a memory, filled with friends old and new. The Friars Golf Club is where those lifelong friendships are made. On the first tee, in the 19th hole and far beyond. Exclusive trips, unforgettable rounds, and the very best people. Indeed, great courses are simply better with great company. So join the Friars today. To learn more, email us at info@thefriars.com and put the word musings in the subject line to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. So we invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience at the Friars Golf Club. Well, I thank Joel Zuckerman very much for joining us here on Musings on Golf. I liked the book so much and read through it. I sent it to one of my siblings and she really enjoyed it as well. There's just a lot of life lessons. There's a lot in there that I think that anyone would enjoy, even though it is sort of outside the boundaries of golf. Get the book. It's certainly worth the read. Thank you, Joel. Let's talk a little bit about a number of things. I had mentioned early on, keeping with that theme of gratitude, boy, the United States Golf Association showed their gratitude for Tiger Woods, and good for them, and good for Tiger, with the USGA announcing that the medal to be awarded to the U.S. Amateur Champion will now be known as the Tiger Woods Medal, and the trophy awarded to the U.S. Junior Amateur Champion will be renamed, redesigned to honor Tiger Woods. You talk about deserving. He remains to this day the only player to win three straight U.S. Junior Championships and three consecutive U.S. Amateur Championships. I know that Tiger, who's kind of become the senior statesman in golf, interestingly enough, is really humbled by that. And, you've got the Jack Nicklaus Medal that's awarded to the U.S. Open Champion. Kudos to Mike Wan and the team over at the USGA for making that decision. What a legacy for Tiger for those kids now, for it to be given the award for juniors and to be given the trophy for the U.S. Amateur Champion that has Tiger Woods' name on it. Wow. Ricky Fowler has always been to me one of the real standouts on the PGA Tour. I really like the guy. I've always liked him. Yeah, he was kind of the cool kid with the orange clothes and the long hair. But Ricky's always been Ricky Fowler. And I was very pleased to see that he was presented earlier this week as the players get ready for the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard up at Bay Hill with the Golf Digest 2026 The Arnie Award, which is the Golf Digest highest honor. It recognizes a golfer who distinguishes himself by giving back. Ricky has his own foundation. He's given back that way. But he's also given back, folks, just in terms of the way that he interacts with people. And I was reading a story on Golf Digest about the first time that Ricky met Mr. Palmer. Gosh, I can't believe we're coming up on 10 years since Arnold passed away. But first time he met Arnold was in 2006, and Ricky was playing in an American Junior Golf Association event at Bay Hill. And Mr. Palmer drove up, shook his hand, and Ricky said, "I remember his handshake and eye contact were strong, and that when people gravitated to him, he made them smile." Boy, was that ever true. And Ricky was always, through the years, a fan favorite at Bay Hill, loved having that, wearing either on his bag or on his lapel, the famous umbrella. What I thought was just a lovely follow-up comment that I think kind of encapsulates a lot of the feelings of what people remember about Mr. Palmer and what made him so special. And Ricky Fowler said, "Arnie really cared about his fans, and I watched him always react to them just by being himself. Seeing that told me that the best way to handle a lot of attention was to continue being myself. It makes the interaction more real, especially with kids. This point in my career, I come across people who tell me how a 5 or 20 second contact we had 10 or 15 years ago had an impact on them. It's given me a greater understanding of who Arnie was and what he did." Great quote. I might have told this story before, but I still remember reading Peter King, the great football writer, NFL football writer, was covering the Baltimore Ravens summer camp one year. And Ed Reed, who eventually was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the great safety for the Baltimore Ravens. At the end of the practice, the players would walk through with fans on both sides, and they'd sign whatever they were given. And typically, granted, at the end of a long, hot day, they'd scribble something and move on. Well, Ed Reed, now even, granted, it's only, what, six letters in his name, very meticulous in signing, took his time. And Peter King asked him afterward, he said, I noticed that you were a lot more deliberate in how you signed that than the rest of the guys. And he said, oh, yeah, I learned that from Arnold Palmer. He said, I played in a pro-am one year, and I watched what Mr. Palmer did. So that kind of legacy is something that Arnold left, and it continues today with what Ricky Fowler was honored with. A few other things. Jet Self was listening to the press conference earlier today with Scottie Scheffler. This is how dedicated and how good Scottie Scheffler is. So his streak of 18 consecutive top 10 finishes ended at the Genesis Invitational a week or so ago. Yeah, it ended because he finished tied for 12th. He didn't finish tied for 51st. He finished tied for 12th. So what did he do in the week off? He said that he went back to Dallas and rebuilt and reinvented his game. And I'm sure he worked with longtime PGA of America professional Randy Smith, who's been his only coach really throughout his career. He rebuilt and reinvented his game. So you're going to see a very focused Scottie Scheffler starting this week and building towards the Masters. There was also some talk. I know he had a funny line about the first time that he ever hosted the Masters Champions Dinner. But watch out for Scheffler this week. He'll be ready. Okay, let's close by. We're going to hear clips from both Nico Echevarria and Shane Lowry. I cannot remember a player of the stature of Shane Lowry. It almost has to go back 10 years when Jordan Spieth really just kind of threw up all over himself and threw away the Masters. And Danny Willett, yeah, he ended up getting the green jacket. But in 2016, that jacket should have been on Jordan Spieth, but he didn't get it done down the stretch. A player of that level, fast forward 10 years to this past Sunday at PGA National here in Palm Beach Gardens, where I live, Shane Lowry, Ryder Cup stud, great international player, three shots up with three holes to go, playing at champion course at PGA National that Jack Nicklaus designed, the bear trap, the really menacing and incredibly difficult final four holes there. Hit his tee shot somehow, some way. I've played that hole on 16. It's a hard dog leg right. For some reason, he hit three iron, which is the right play off the tee, and sprayed it to the right into the water. Ends up making double bogey and then hit it in the water on 17, the par three. What that can happen? Shane Lowry going from three up with three to go to losing the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches to Nico Echevarria, who echoes kind of what I just said in this clip that you'll hear first from Nico about how demanding that final stretch of holes is.
To be honest, no, I didn't think it was going to be possible with a three-shot lead that he had. But at the same time, the bear trap played harder today than any of the other 3 days. I was playing into the wind. It's unfortunate the way he finished. It's a hard tournament to close. It's not easy to be having a lead coming down the stretch on this course.
No question about it. It is a hard tournament to close. As far as the PGA Tour goes, as hard as any golf course is to close, especially when that wind kicks up. That's what happened. And Lowry just hit a couple of bad shots. And listen to this clip from Shane Lowry about not only how that one shot was poorly struck, how it really seeped into his mind over the last three holes.
I had the tournament in my hands and I threw it away. What more can I say? It's twice this year now so far, so I'm getting good at it. But yeah, look, what can I say? Like, I played unbelievable all day, and then one bad shot in 16 and completely threw me for the last three holes. It's never happened to me before. I said to Darren, I said, how do I feel like this now when I went through what I did in last September in Bethpage? You know, I got through that fine, and then, you know, I just felt like it was weird out there. I just really, yeah, just couldn't feel a club face in the last three holes then after my tee shot in 16. It was strange, but, you know, what can I say? It's very, very disappointing. Jeez.
We'll get over it, but it was stunning. Lowry referenced what happened earlier this year in January at the Dubai Invitational on the DP World Tour. On the 18th hole, his 72nd hole, he chipped a pitch shot into the water, doubled 18, finished tied for third. So that was one hole, but this one was almost more dramatic. But he'll rebound. And I'm sure Keegan Bradley, if he ever hears that quote, wished that that's the way that Lauer had played back at Bethpage when it really counted for the Ryder Cup. But something tells me Shane Lowry will be able to rebound just fine out of all this. A lot of gratitude, folks. A lot of gratitude for having Janice Self as my executive producer and my great friend. Gratitude for having you all as listeners. I thank you. And gratitude to, again, to Joel Zuckerman, who joined us for a terrific interview. Good luck with the book. Get that guy. If you need a great speaker, get that guy. He is really, really good. Kelly Elbin signing off. Enjoy the Arnold Palmer Invitational this week. And remember how much Mr. Palmer has meant to the game. And I'm sure you'll see a lot of that with what the players say and what they do this week at Bay Hill. Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere that you get your favorite podcasts. And also, you've got to check out the Musings on Golf TikTok. That's it for this week. Kevin Hammer, the newly elected president of the United States Golf Association, will be our guest next week on Musings on Golf.